Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming here from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at and that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views. And, well, for the next hour, they're going to be the views of Pastor David Whitney of the Institute of the Constitution. And we're going to be talking about the document that makes America different than any other nation in the world. Now, basically, it's our Constitution, which, of course, was signed in the day of our Lord. I was just reading an article in the Wall Street Journal talking about our secular Constitution, you know, and but we didn't have a secular Constitution. It was signed in the day of our Lord. They knew exactly what that meant at that time because almost all of the people who signed the Constitution were Christians, and this document was drawn up based upon Christian principles of separation of powers and the whole idea based upon the writings of our Declaration of Independence. It said it was God who gave us our freedom, and the Constitution was drawn up to ensure that the freedoms that we were given and granted by God were to be preserved. But you see, this is no longer taught today because there's a conspiracy against God. There's really an organized effort to destroy the Christian foundation of this country, and that's why the Masons, who control the United States Supreme Court from 1941 to 1971, took God and prayer and the Ten Commandments out of our schools because, you see, they worship a different God until people understand that we're involved in a spiritual battle and there really are people in key positions who hate Christianity. And we're not going to be able to address effectively what is really going on because these people work at a cabal. They swear allegiance to our country, but they hate America. The goal is to destroy this nation, and something big is amiss. All you need to do is see what happened to the stock market today. See what happened to the price of gold over the last 3 or 4 days. It's gone up almost $100 an ounce. Silver was up $2.29 today. We're on the verge of something big, and whether it'll happen this week, next week or the week after that, I don't know if it's going to involve the European banks or our banks, but something major is happening to the world financial system. And we're going to be very difficult period, I believe. But, of course, you have to know the foundations because we will not be able to have anything to go back to unless the American people understand why America is different, why our founding fathers created the sort of government they did, and that we are not a democracy. No matter what the president says, no matter what you learn in school, no matter what the media tells you and the books you read tell you, they're all controlled by people who hate the idea of a freedom, a republic under a written document ruled by law. They want rule by men, and whatever our elected representatives do, that's perfectly all right. After all, we're a democracy, and we're not. In fact, the whole idea was to create a form of government where the people couldn't vote themselves into slavery, because everybody wants all the goodies government can give them. They want their Social Security. They want their Medicare. They want a government that will take care of them from the cradle to the grave, and they want to be free, and you can't have it both ways. Pastor David Whitney, you take over.
Well, thank you, Dr. Stan. You're exactly right. I think it was Margaret Thatcher, perhaps she was quoting someone else, said socialism only works until you run out of other people's money. That seems to be what's happening as our system is collapsing. But if we got back to the design our founders constructed and we were to follow that design, we could see a restoration of liberty and a true restoration of our constitutional republic. But first we've got to understand those founding documents that they crafted, what they actually said, what they meant by what the words on paper are written.
Go right ahead, David.
Well, as we've shared before, if we talk about our founders' view of law and government, it's very simple to describe it. It's right there in the Declaration of Independence. There is a creator God.
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Well, many men begin having prostate symptoms when they get to be 60 years of age, so Radio Liberty is offering a great product. It's called Prostate Support. It's put together by one of the country's leading health food manufacturers. It contains ingredients which have been proven to work. I know health experts who take the product, and I use it as well, and I think that really is very effective. In addition, we have a product for women during that difficult time of life. It's called Menopause Support. And lastly, we have a product for people who have chronic difficulty with their immune system and nothing else seems to work. It's called Immune Support. All are available by calling 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. These products are compiled by a very reliable company. Give us a call, 1-800-544-8927.
Did you know that there's an increasing amount of scientific data which says that fluoride in drinking water is dangerous? Are you aware that your drinking water may in fact contain many unhealthy substances, even things which can cause sickness or disease? If you'd like information on how to remove these contaminants, find out about the Verkey water filter. You can call 800-544-8927 for complete information. There is a way to return to having pure, safe drinking water. The Verkey water filter. Call 800-544-8927 for information about a product that could protect you and your family from waterborne disease. The number to call is 800-544-8927. Call today.
Certainly may well have been a deist during part of his life, but he quotes, he's quoting a statement he made during the Constitutional Convention, but you go right ahead with that, David.
Yes, and this quote proves that he was not a deist by that time in his life, that in the beginning of the contest with Britain, when we were sensible of danger, we had daily prayers in this room for the divine protection. Now, again, a deist would never pray, but Ben Franklin, at the time of the Revolution, as well as at the time of the Constitutional Convention, was calling for prayer, and he basically is saying prayer gets God's attention and gets God's divine protection. That is, God enters into the affairs of men, and he does something in response to our prayers. And he said, our prayers, sir, speaking to President Washington, President of the Convention, our prayers, sir, were heard. Now, again, a deist does not believe in prayer because they do not believe God hears prayers. Well, Ben Franklin believed that their prayers were heard, and they were graciously answered. I have, sir, lived a long time, and the longer I live, the more convincing proof I see of this truth, that God governs in the affairs of men. That statement is the exact opposite of a deist. He continues, and if a sparrow cannot fall to the ground without his notice, quoting scripture there, quoting Jesus in the Sermon on the Mount, if a sparrow cannot fall to the ground without his notice, is it probable that an empire can rise without his aid? We have been assured, sir, in the sacred writing, that except the Lord build the house, they labor in vain that build it. I firmly believe this. That is, Franklin was stating, I am not a deist. And he continues, and I also believe that without his, that is God's, concurring aid, we shall succeed in this political building no better than the builders of Babel. Benjamin Franklin was not a deist, at least by this point in his life. Indeed, it says right here that he looks to the sacred writings, and he goes on to quote the Bible in a number of different respects in this statement. And again, a Bible believer would not be a deist, because very clearly it speaks of God governing in the affairs of men. So Franklin could not be ranked with those who would say that our founders were a bunch of deists, and yet he's often one that's identified as a deist. Another favorite that those who want to claim our founders were all deists is Thomas Jefferson. Although he was not part of the Constitutional Convention, certainly he drafted the Declaration of Independence, was a very key framer of many of the important documents. Think of the Virginia Resolves, the Kentucky Resolves that he wrote, and was involved in the Constitution of the State of Virginia and so on. Very, very significant. When he was inaugurated the second time as president of these United States, as in 1805, he said this in his inaugural address. And again, these statements are not those of a deist, because he's calling for prayer, calling for a God who intervenes in the affairs of men. Quote Thomas Jefferson in his inaugural address, second inaugural, I shall need the favor of that being in whose hands we are, who led our forefathers as Israel of old from their native land and planted them in a country flowing with all the necessaries and comforts of life, who has covered our infancy with his providence and our riper years with his wisdom and power, and to whose goodness I ask you to join with me in supplications, that is, prayers, that he will so enlighten the minds of your servants, guide their counsels, and prosper their measures, that whatsoever they do shall result in your good, and shall secure to you the peace, friendship, and approbation of all nations. Again, that statement cannot be made by a deist. He's calling for prayer. He says, I'm going to pray as the president, and I encourage you to pray. Pray for me. Pray for all of those in power on the federal level, that God would continue to shed his grace on us, continue to demonstrate his providence, just as he did when we were founded as a country, even before that, when the Pilgrims first came here and so on, when Jamestown was settled. God's providence, God was actively involved in every step of the way, Thomas Jefferson said in his second inaugural address. So again, Jefferson, one of the ones often cited as a deist, and true, he may have made some deistic statements at some point in time, but he was not a deist at all by this point in his life. Others that are often cited as deists, George Washington, of course, that one's a little harder for the deistic crowd to prove, because Washington made so many statements that clearly demonstrated he was not a deist. For example, his signature was required that he on oath believed the 39 articles of the Anglican Church, which in those days was a very orthodox church, that is, following the orthodox Christian faith. And he was a vestryman in that is one of the positions of leadership in the Anglican Church, and he had to sign a document that he believed those 39 articles. So either he was perjuring himself by signing those, or he was telling the truth that indeed he believed those doctrines, and many other speeches he gave demonstrate that as well. For example, his speech to the Delaware chiefs, this was May 12th in the year 1779, he said to them, you will do well to wish to learn our ways of life, and above all, the religion of Jesus Christ. These will make you a greater and a happier people than you are. Wow. He spoke of Jesus Christ as the author of his religion, and a letter that to the 13 governors on the 8th of June, 1783, he refers to Jesus Christ as the divine author of our blessed religion. Again, George Washington, there is no way that anyone could claim, if they look at the historic statements, his writings, his letters, his speeches, you cannot make the accurate claim that George Washington was a deist ever in his life. I mean, some of these others might say at some time they made deistic statements, but never George Washington could be identified as a deist. Well, how about some of those who are lesser lights in terms of may not be attacked as deists. Were they Christians? Well, Alexander Hamilton, one of the significant members of George Washington's inner circle because of his he's aide-de-camp to him during the War for Independence, and Hamilton urged the formation of a Christian constitutional society because he said it was necessary in order to preserve our form of government. We had to preserve the values essential to this form of government, to this nation, and he knew that Christianity was at the very basis of it, and if somehow our nation lost Christianity as its foundation, our Constitution would fall as well, which ties in perfectly with what you have said earlier, Dr. Stan, that this is really a spiritual battle, a spiritual battle fought on a political front, but it is ultimately a spiritual battle going on here between the truth of God's word and the lies of Satan. Well, Alexander Hamilton, as we know, got himself into a duel and was shot and was dying. And as he lay on his deathbed, and he died on the 11th of July, 1804, he said this before he died, quote, "I have a tender reliance on the mercy of the Almighty through the merits of the Lord Jesus Christ." He was trusting Christ as his Savior, and indeed he did have some sins on his character. It seems that he did get trapped in or caught in an adulterous affair and so on. So Alexander Hamilton repented of those things and was trusting Jesus Christ for his salvation as he lay dying.
Well, I think, David, the one person that nobody would really want to call a Christian was Thomas Paine, who certainly wrote I Owe Common Sense, and really was one of the people who really sort of invigorated the Constitution. Invigorated the idea of the Revolutionary War. Would you agree with that?
Yes, I would. In fact, Thomas Paine is the exception that proves the rule. You could rightly label Thomas Paine a deist, and none of this really came out in his original work, Common Sense. But his second book that he published was just very clearly an anti-Christian screed.
That's the Age of Reason.
And that's
it's
right.
As I remember my minister used to say, whenever his blood pressure got down, he'd always, feeling a little lightheaded, he would read the book, and immediately his blood pressure would come right up again.
Well, it's amazing to see how the rest of our founders reacted to it. People like Benjamin Franklin urged him to burn the manuscript. And others said, don't publish this thing. This is terrible. This is a... the reaction, was so strong against him that he actually left the United States and went into Europe, and he lived the rest of his life there, where he found many comrades who were of deistic and anti-Christian bent. Certainly those leading up to the French Revolution held to that view. So he found that he was not at all comfortable once he expressed his kind of anti-Christian venom.
And I think it's really very interesting. He did actually make one trip back to the United States, and the only person who talked to him was Thomas Jefferson. And everybody was very furious with Thomas Jefferson because, of course, he suddenly had Thomas Paine over to the White House or something of the sort. Anyway, he met with him. But everybody was very critical of Thomas Jefferson because he did meet with Thomas Paine. Now, if that is true, how could anybody say that our founding fathers were deists? They were not. In fact, they objected mightily to Thomas Paine's book, The Age of Reason, which, if your blood pressure ever does get down, get a copy and read it because it'll get you furious. Go ahead.
Oh, yes. So Thomas Paine is really the exception that proves the rule that deism was not accepted by our founders. Instead, our founders were Christians, and again, some of them, we would say they didn't hold to all the essential doctrines of the Christian faith, that they were not perfect Christians by any means, either in their practice or in their belief, but they were Christian, and most of all, they held to a biblical view of law and government, a view that sadly has been very much lost in our day, is not preached from almost any of the pulpits, with few notable exceptions across this great land, and that's part of the tragic problem of America losing its way spiritually. The pulpits have misled us.
But of course, those who would establish a dictatorship know that you'll either be ruled by God or you'll be ruled by tyrants. And they want a tyrannical regime. And they're the ones who are conspiring to take God out of our schools and out of our society. Go right ahead.
Well, another of well-known founders is John Jay. He actually served as the first Chief Justice of the U.S. Supreme Court. And consider our current Chief Justice and think if our current Chief
Heart disease is on the rise. Clogged arteries, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol levels may not be fully detected by you, but the symptoms are there. Loss of energy, blood sugar spikes and drops, poor circulation, and irregular heartbeat are just a few of these that can alert you that something is wrong. Hear how Heart and Body Extract is making a difference in thousands of people's lives across America.
My blood pressure has normalized. My diabetes has totally improved.
Everyone is telling me now how much healthier I look. And I'm telling everyone how much healthier I feel. I recommend Heart Body Extract to everyone.
Anybody over 40 in the North American continent should be using this product as a preventative to keep their cardiovascular system healthy.
Order your two-month supply today by calling 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. Or order online, hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract, 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com.
You may be new to freeze-dried foods. You may have storable food questions. You may want to buy your freeze-dried foods from a very reputable company and not go broke in the process. Welcome to the Freeze-Dry Guy. Okay, actually, we're more than just one guy. We're a California-based company that's been serving our U.S. military and other government agencies with the finest in freeze-dried storable foods and emergency rations since 1970. See all about us at freezedryguy.com. With Freeze-Dry Guy freeze-dried foods, you can and will be ready for just about any unexpected crisis. Freeze-dried guy foods are delicious, require little preparation, and will taste just as fresh decades from now as they do today. Just add hot water and serve. Backpackers consistently rate us number one year after year as the best tasting and ease of preparation. Isn't that what you want for your family? Visit freezedryguy.com or call 866-404-FOOD. That's 866-404-3663 or go to freezedryguy.com. Freeze-dry guy, the best you can buy.
Sometimes when you're having an important spiritual conversation with a friend or loved one, time simply runs out. Now there's a place on the World Wide Web that will help you keep your friend's interest until you can meet again face to face. I'm talking about thestoryofjesus.com. Yes, that's right, thestoryofjesus.com. It's a wonderful new website that does exactly what you think it should. It tells the story of Jesus Christ. You'll find there a completely harmonized version of the four gospel accounts. It's available for you to browse through on your computer, download and print for a permanent reference, and you can even listen to the story on your computer or download files, which will work on your portable digital player. Tell your friends. Use it yourself. That's thestoryofjesus.com. Simple as that. Thestoryofjesus.com. For many decades, these great United States have had security and plenty because of the thousands of small farms which supply our every nutritional need. For generations, these dedicated men and women have supplied us with fresh food at reasonable cost. There is a chance that our food supply could be cut off in the event of a national emergency. You should carefully consider planting your own home garden. A seed bank from seedcatalog.com will make it almost easy. A seed bank contains every seed you'll need to plant a basic survival garden. All heirloom and all ready for you to create that special, necessary outdoor resource. Where can you find out more? Call 888-866-9132 or go to seedcatalog.com. Call 888-866-9132 right now and order seed for this year's garden. Seedcatalog.com.
That the Supreme Court held and stipulated that America was a Christian nation. Now, does that mean everybody has to be a Christian? No. Did it mean that you had to be a Christian to hold office? Well, in some states you did, in some states you didn't. But certainly in the case of the Church of the Holy Trinity versus the United States, and this was about 1894, as I remember, 1893, 1894, and we actually have covered this in one of our newsletters, and you can get it off the internet, why, of course, the Supreme Court held America was a Christian nation. Now, why is this never taught in school? because there's a conspiracy against Jesus Christ, and it works at the highest levels of our government today, and they can, people who are conspiring against Jesus, control our textbooks, our educational system, and our medium, and this is why you will never hear these things said, except on perhaps a program like this. Go right ahead, David.
Well, yes, thank you, Dr. Stan. We're just going to mention a couple of more examples, but there's many more than just these. For example, Roger Sherman, who was the author of The Great Compromise, by which we have a House and a Senate, which compose Congress, he was an elder in as a Puritan in Connecticut, and he was an elder actually in the church that was pastored by Jonathan Edwards Jr. years before. And he said this, quote, "The threatenings of the law against impenitent sinners are as important as the promises of the gospel." In the words of John Adams, Sherman was an old Puritan, as honest as an angel, and as firm in the cause of American independence as Mount Atlas. Clearly a solid believer in the Lord Jesus Christ, and an elder in his church, a leader spiritually in his community. And then let me just mention Patrick Henry. He's one of my favorites. For his bold stand and his famous speech there that launched Virginia into independence. And in his last will and testament, this is what he wrote, quote, "This is all the inheritance I can give to my dear family. The religion of Christ can give them one which will make them rich indeed." Patrick Henry was one of the solid Christians in Virginia who led that state as their governor and led moving towards the war for independence, and he is not alone. If we look at the people who were involved, actively involved in the war for independence, actively involved in drafting the Declaration and signing the Declaration and the Constitution and the state the constitutional conventions and the ratifying convention, all these people, the vast and overwhelming majority of them believed the basic doctrines of Christianity and were active in Christian churches. A few minor exceptions, but even those exceptions, other than Thomas Paine, even those who did not believe some of the essential doctrines of Christianity, nonetheless, they believed that the basic values of Christianity were essential to our constitutional republic, essential for a good society. And they all said if you lost these, if somehow America turned away from the truth of Christianity, America would be finished. Our system would not work. John Adams is famous for saying, he's the second president and signer of the Constitution. He said, our Constitution was made only for a moral and religious, by the way, he meant by the word religious, Christian, a moral and religious people is wholly inadequate for the governance of any other. That is, if the people are not Christians, the people are not self-governed, you're not going to be able to make this system work, because it was designed for the maximum amount of freedom for the individual. Now, freedom is not the same thing as license. License is, I'll do whatever I want. I want to break into a store and steal something, that's what I'll do. That's not freedom as our founders spoke of it. Freedom was the ability to obey God's law. So that instead of breaking into the store, you did what was right. You did not steal. And so if you're going to have a society with the minimum amount of governmental restraint on the individual, liberty can only be preserved if those individuals have self-restraint. That is, individually, they're seeking to follow and obey God's law so that you don't need a whole police force to be watching them 24/7 to see every move they make and to clamp down on them if they ever step out of line, like the kind of tyrannical 1984 world that we're inhabiting today.
And I think it's so important to realize, because that basically, freedom is not the ability to do whatever you want to do. Freedom is the ability to do what you should do according to God's law. That is what freedom is. Our founding fathers realized that liberty and limited government were synonymous. But if you're not ruled by God and you're not answerable to God, and they've taken God out of our prayers, out of our schools, out of our homes, disciplined out of our schools, and then, of course, you're going to be ruled by tyrants. And there are people, ladies and gentlemen, who belong to the Brotherhood of Darkness who want just that, a tyrannical form of government.
While the storm clouds gather far across the sea,
this
is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll-free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-730-9796.
Well, many men begin having prostate symptoms when they get to be 60 years of age, so Radio Liberty is offering a great product. It's called Prostate Support. It's put together by one of the country's leading health food manufacturers. It contains ingredients which have been proven to work. I know health experts who take the product, and I use it as well, and I think that really is very effective. In addition, we have a product for women during that difficult time of life. It's called Menopause Support. And lastly, we have a product for people who have chronic difficulty with their immune system and nothing else seems to work. It's called Immune Support. All are available by calling 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. These products are compiled by a very reliable company. Give us a call, 1-800-544-8927.
People are becoming more aware of the dangers of fluoride in their drinking water. We're offering you a proven way to remove more than 95% of this dangerous chemical, which threatens your good health. It's the Whole House Fluoride Removal System, available right now from Radio Liberty. This system will also remove aluminum, manganese, arsenic, lead, and most heavy metal. Your fear regarding these dangerous chemicals in the water you drink can be eased by getting more information from RadioLiberty.com. Go to RadioLiberty.com right now and find out all you need to know about protecting your home's precious water supply. Read the information about the Whole House Water Fluoride Removal System and order one. Free shipping is included in every purchase. You can also call 1-800-544-8927. Where's that information? RadioLiberty.com. That's 1-800-544-8927.
We want you to tell our listeners how they can get in touch with the Institute on the Constitution and begin learning about the foundations of our freedom, why we're a republic and not a democracy, and why they've lied to us at every turn, telling us we're a democracy when there's not one bit of evidence that we are, and all the evidence, if you read the Constitution, the Declaration of Independence, the Bill of Rights, the Federalist Papers, the constitutions of all 50 states, you'll never see the use of the word a democracy other than to say we don't want a democracy, we want a republic, because democracies are suddenly always end up in chaos. And that's exactly what, of course, Plato had said. Democracies always degenerate into despotism. Our founding fathers knew that. Isn't it a shame none of our modern-day political scientists know that? David, how can people get in touch with the Institute of the Constitution and actually set up a program in their community to begin to take America back by teaching our Constitution?
Indeed. Thank you, Dr. Stan. And we know that many people would be intimidated by the idea of teaching other people the Constitution. So at Institute on the Constitution, we've put together what we call a host kit, because you're not actually the teacher. The instructor is a constitutional law professor, John Eismo, and historian David Barton. In the lectures that we put on DVD, and you as a host are in the host kit, you have a student manual, and the student manual is a detailed outline of each of those lectures with test questions and discussion questions that follow that up, and supplemental reading materials that go along with that can be read between each session. And then in addition to that, for the host, we've put together what we call a host manual that describes how to conduct the course in detail and also gives you all the answers to those test questions. So you can seem like, hey, you're really smart. You know all the answers that the students are learning. But this is designed so that anyone really, with any group of people, can communicate what our founders' view of law and government is, as well as give the students a working knowledge of the Declaration, the Constitution, and the Bill of Rights, which are essential. If you don't have a working knowledge of those three documents, you do not know what needs to be done to restore our republic. And that's why this is so essential in this desperate time, that we raise up a huge number of Americans who understand these things and can take action appropriately. They can evaluate candidates based upon a standard, the fixed standard of the Constitution, as to whether the candidates really qualify, or if they do qualify, whether once they take office they act in accordance with the Constitution or violate it and therefore need to be put out of office. So you can get a hold of us at Institute on the Constitution. Our toll free number is 1-866-730-9796. That toll free number for Institute on the Constitution is 1-866-730-9796. Or you can go on our website. Our website, we've just renamed it. It's been upgraded and a lot of new things there. It's called The American View. All one word, theamericanview.com. And that's because the American view that I've shared earlier is very clearly expressed by our founders. There is a creator God. Our rights come from him. The purpose of government is to secure those God-given rights. That's The American View. And that's our website, theamericanview.com. And just click on the store there and click on the host kit with many other materials that can help you understand our Constitution, what our founders wrote. But getting a host kit is the best way to start, and this is the perfect time to do it here in the midst of August. Get a host kit and begin to prepare to conduct a class this fall. We often have people conduct them in churches or community centers. Some conduct them in their homes for a smaller gathering of folks, but all over America, this is taking place, and it's very exciting to hear what hosts are discovering themselves and what their students are discovering, and the stepping forward that many of the students, as they graduate, say, hey, I gotta do something. Well, we say one of the first things you can do is teach another circle of people who weren't in the class that you were in. And so we have hosts who are multiplying the hosts in graduating classes. So we see that all over this country, and that is very encouraging, and we need a rapid expansion of people who are taking this material and using it. So you either call us toll-free, 866-730-9796, or go to our website that is now called TheAmericanView.com. That's TheAmericanView, all one word, TheAmericanView.com. And there's many other materials there, as well as some brief video snippets that can be helping you understand and apply the things that our founders taught so clearly.
And one more time, the telephone number.
Our telephone number at Institute on the Constitution is 1-866-730-9796.
866-730-9796?
That's correct, actually.
Okay, fine. Well, ladies and gentlemen, do it. Don't put it off. Get a kit and get started teaching this. How can we possibly hope to maintain a form of government that nobody understands? How many Americans honestly believe we're a democracy? I know when I first got started, I got started on this 49 years ago when I turned on a radio program or television program, and the man was saying, America is not a democracy. It's a republic. And I knew America was a democracy. I was a graduate of the University of California. I had a Phi Beta Kappa to prove how smart I was. But of course, is it possible that I'd not been educated properly? Is it possible that my professors had all lied to me, and my teachers had lied to me, and the textbooks had lied? And when I found that they were all lying, whether they knew they were lying or not, I don't know, but they were all lying. America, as you go back and read the founding documents, and they stress, we do not want a democracy because the people vote themselves into tyranny. We want a republic where the powers of the central government are limited, and we don't want the government providing for the people, because if the government can provide for the people, eventually, of course, it will control the people, and then eventually there'll be all sorts of chaos that'll develop. And ladies and gentlemen, that's what we're moving into now. There's no way we can afford the Medicare and Social Security, and everybody's got to be demanding because they're entitled to it. But in a free society, you're not entitled to anything other than the pursuit of happiness. Not even guaranteed happiness, but the opportunity to pursue happiness, to try to be happy, to look after yourself, to look after your family, to help others. But of course, any government that can provide for you from the cradle to the grave must be able to control you from the cradle to the grave. And a government that can provide whatever you need must be able to take whatever you have. And ladies and gentlemen, that is coming, and coming very soon. Go right ahead, David.
Well, and that's exactly what our founders designed this government to prevent, and why they read extensively political philosophers like Baron Charles Montesquieu, who said that God is the author of all law. That is, if somebody claims something is law and it disagrees with what God's word says, that's not law at all. It's ridiculous. That's junk. It's a piece of paper with ink spilled on it. Montesquieu also taught, and our founders all expressed this, that because of man's sinful nature, man departs from God's law. He disobeys God's law, and therefore civil government's necessary to keep man in his behavior, not necessarily his thinking, but his behavior, to keep man within the confines of God's law. But sinfulness of human nature, Montesquieu taught, that sinfulness is also present in the people who are in positions of power, and that will cause government to become despotic if government is not put in check. And in other words, government's not forced to obey God's law. You're going to have a despotism that develops. And therefore, to keep government moderate, it's best to separate government into three branches: legislative, executive, and judicial. And of course, Montesquieu is actually drawing on a scripture. It's Isaiah 33:22 that says, God is our judge. God is our lawgiver. God is our king. There's the three branches. They're only safely together in God as three branches. Among human beings, they must be separated into three separate branches in order to prevent despotism, in the idea that these three branches will be a check against one another. They'll be jealous for their own power, so they won't want the other branch getting more power than them. And so there'll be this kind of competition between the three branches that will prevent despotism from emerging. Montesquieu also taught that Christianity, of all the religions in the world, makes government more humane. He spoke of the Mohammedan system, that is what we call Muslims, and how that there it's not humane at all. I mean, because nobody really has any rights, and whoever the Sultan is can basically take your life for any reason at all, and there's no security for your God-given rights under that system. It's not a humane system. Christianity is the only religion that makes government humane. Now, the second most quoted author behind the Bible, behind Montesquieu, was Sir William Blackstone, who was legal scholar in England, and his main work, Commentaries on the Laws of England, was read by all of our founders. In fact, you could say he was their law professor, even though only a few of them studied under Blackstone directly, having traveled to England. All of our founders studied under Blackstone by reading the Commentaries on the Laws of England. It was a bestseller here in the first 13 states. It sold far more copies on this side of the Atlantic Ocean than it actually did in England. And this work was the authority in America's courtroom up to about 100 years ago. If an attorney could find a quotation from Blackstone that supported his contentions, he was most likely to have won his case, because Blackstone was seen as the authority until all that system of common law and Christianity began to be undermined from the law schools, Harvard Law first of all, but then the other law schools all began to undermine that whole structure. But up to that point in time, he was the authority. And our founders drew these thoughts from William Blackstone. They gained a better understanding of English common law, which is the basis of our American system of law. And Blackstone, as we've said before, spoke of three categories of law. And these three categories are so important because they were the framework that our founders were thinking of as they drafted the words of the Declaration of Independence. The first category, Blackstone said, is revealed law. quoting Blackstone, he said, "The doctrines thus delivered we call the revealed or divine law, and they are to be found only in the Holy Scriptures." So the first category of law is the divine revealed law that we gain from studying the Bible. The second category of law, he used the phrase, the law of nature. And that should ring a bell with us, because if you know the Declaration of Independence, you know that that phrase appears in the Declaration of Independence as the foundation of what law is for these 13 colonies, about to become 13 independent states. They said the laws of nature. So it's very, knowing that they all read Blackstone, it's very important to ask, what did Blackstone mean when he used that phrase, the laws of nature? Blackstone said, quote, "When he, that is God, created man and endued him with free will to conduct himself in all parts of life, he laid down certain immutable laws of human nature whereby that free will is in some degree regulated and restrained, and gave him, that is human beings, also the faculty of reason to discover the purpose of those laws." So human reason and human conscience given by God in the heart of every man is the law of nature. So these first two categories, the law of nature and revealed law, are directly the phrasing used by our founders in the Declaration of Independence when they speak of the law of nature, that's Blackstone's second category, and the law of nature's God. Who is nature's God? He's the creator. He's the one who made the universe. He's the author, therefore, of the Bible. So the law of nature's God refers to Blackstone's first category, revealed law, which is found only in the Holy Scriptures. So our founders said, quoting Blackstone, that the two foundations of law in America are the Bible and human conscience, human reason that God has informed of his laws that are unchangeable. And then the third category of law, which is again very significant, is Blackstone called it municipal law. That's which human beings adopt, which civil government crafts. And Blackstone said very clearly that human law, municipal law, must conform to the law of nature and revealed law, or it's not valid. Quoting Blackstone, he said, "Upon these two foundations, revealed law and the law of nature, and the law, where he said the law of nature and the law of revelation, depend all human laws. That is to say, no human law should be suffered to contradict these." That is, if God's word says the opposite of what the judge says, or what the legislature says, or what the governor says, or the judge, or the they're wrong. So the state of New York, when they say two men can marry, well, God's word says the exact opposite. No, they can't. That's not marriage. You may call it marriage, but it's not marriage. That's ridiculous. That's calling black white and white black. You're making up ridiculous definitions that do not reflect the reality of the universe. And so Blackstone said municipal law, what human beings create, is only valid if it's in full agreement with the revealed law and with the law of nature. Wow, if we were to take that standard, which is what our founders believed, if we were to take that standard and lay it down upon both state laws as well as federal laws, we'd find that the majority of them, that's right, the majority of them in our day are not law. They're against God's law. They're a violation of God's law in one way, shape, or form, and therefore they are not law. What if we could train? And this is part of the problem. All lawyers are trained in, well, as my friend Michael Peruca says, anybody that's been to law school is not fit to be a lawyer because they don't know the law. They've been taught unlaw, the opposite of law, the opposite of what our founders believed and understood, the opposite of what William Blackstone taught them. And so we have had a revolution, 180 degrees from what our founders structured, and part of it is what's taking place in law schools and what is the training of lawyers and therefore of judges and many politicians who follow this unlaw system rather than, as our founders recognize, wait a minute, there is a divine standard against which every human law must be measured to determine if it's valid or if it's invalid. It doesn't mean that divine standard, throw it out. It's just a piece of paper with ink that's been spilled upon it. Now, Blackstone also contributed this next idea that's very significant. He contributed the idea of judicial restraint. That is, judges do not make law. They simply expound and apply the law. And in fact, if judges step outside the boundaries of what is true law, God's law, then what they're doing is unlaw, and it needs to be stopped. Judges are to be restrained by the standard of God's law. Very, very significant thought that Blackstone contributed to our founders. Indeed, he was, of human beings, the second most quoted by our founders. They respected him and studied him extensively. And if we take the next most quoted author, it's John Locke. And if you were to take just those three authors, the 34% quotations from the Bible, Montesquieu, Blackstone, and Locke, you have more than 50% of the quotations of our founders coming from authorities that either were directly the Bible, quotations of the Bible itself, or those who were expositors of the Bible, such as Blackstone or Montesquieu, Blackstone, and John Locke.
Hold that thought there, David. We'll be back in just a moment to wrap up this program. But ladies and gentlemen, this is seminal to understanding what it's all about. Blackstone, certainly Locke and Montesquieu, the three authors of our form of government. Go right ahead, David.
When we look at John Locke, he authored the first treatise on civil government and the second treatise on civil government.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a four tape or a four CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets, a little protects your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927, or go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
Sometimes when you're having an important spiritual conversation with a friend or loved one, time simply runs out. Now there's a place on the World Wide Web that will help you keep your friend's interest until you can meet again face to face. I'm talking about thestoryofjesus.com. Yes, that's right, thestoryofjesus.com. It's a wonderful new website that does exactly what you think it should. It tells the story of Jesus Christ. You'll find there a completely harmonized version of the four gospel accounts. It's available for you to browse through on your computer, download in print for a permanent reference, and you can even listen to the story on your computer or download files, which will work on your portable digital player. Tell your friends. Use it yourself. That's thestoryofjesus.com. Simple as that. Thestoryofjesus.com. For many decades, these great United States have had security and plenty because of the thousands of small farms which supply our every nutritional need. For generations, these dedicated men and women have supplied us with fresh food at reasonable cost. There is a chance that our food supply could be cut off in the event of a national emergency. You should carefully consider planting your own home garden. A seed bank from seedcatalog.com will make it almost easy. A seed bank contains every seed you'll need to plant a basic survival garden. All heirloom and all ready for you to create that special, necessary outdoor resource. Where can you find out more? Call 888-866-9132 or go to seedcatalog.com. Call 888-866-9132 right now and order seed for this year's garden. Seedcatalog.com.
Montesquieu, you need to do your homework, and you need to find out that you were lied to all through school. America is a republic and not a democracy. Well, if you don't believe there's a conspiracy, just look it up, check it out, find it out. But once you realize you've been lied to about that, you'll find you've been lied to about most things. And that's why we do what we do. And that's why I do hope many of you out there will want to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters and bring the truths that we espouse. They're not my truths. They're just the fundamental truths of society, and certainly the fundamental truths that's laid out by our founding fathers, and the fundamental truths that you'll find in the Holy Scriptures, which is the foundation of all freedom. For where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is liberty. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we do hope if you are in a position to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, you will. We have a couple of stations actually contacted me within the last couple of days. One station in Indiana, excellent, excellent station. And we would love to be on there for our evening program. Another station in Phoenix, Arizona. And we hope we can work something out. But, of course, we have to have the funding before we'll do it. So if you're in a position to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. We have some wonderful advertisers, and we're really grateful to them because they really help so much. But if you would like to advertise or know somebody who would like to advertise, why, of course, you can call that same number, 1-800-544-8927. We are on the edge of dramatic changes, and I fear that they're going to be for the worse. I think that the very financial structure of our nation is beginning to crumble. Our leaders are preparing to take us into a war with the Muslim world. Our leaders intend to expand their dictatorial control over our lives, and that's why we've all been given a number, why we all have cards, why they're setting up the cameras every place, why they have dossiers on us, DARPA, FEMA, of the FBI, the CIA, the NSA, all different dossiers, and then, of course, they're correlated to the fusion centers, F-U-S-I-O-N. Look it up on the Internet. And then, of course, they have Project Echelon. They listen to all of your conversations. Echelon, E-S-C-H-E-L-O-N. They manipulate the stock market on a regular basis. That's the plunge protection team. Nothing as it appears to be. Everything is manipulated. You need to get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. You need to get my talks on the dark secret and, of course, on the forbidden secret, and get the syllabuses that go with that, because they'll help you to understand and to verify what we're talking about. You want to get the 4-CD set on the Dark Awakening. That's the Dark Awakening. To understand who these people are who've been programmed to commit acts of violence in the coming months and years. You certainly want to get the 4-CD sets, part one and part two of Dr. Dennis Cuddy's The Illuminati. Information you'll never get elsewhere. That's The Illuminati. And then, of course, we hope you'll want to get Pastor Billy Crone's excellent DVD sets. He has, I think there's 10 in his Final Countdown DVD series. There's either 8 or 10 in his Judge Creation, and we carry his Fearful Creation. You need to get these DVD series because they all end with an invitation to come into a personal relationship with our Lord. So remember our number, 1-800-544-8927. Watchers 2, an excellent DVD by Lynn Marzulli. You'll certainly want to get that. Lynn Marzulli, you'll want to watch it and get your friends over, and hopefully they'll begin to understand we are approaching a terrible period of crisis. And then, of course, we ask you to go to our website, radioliberty.com. You can listen to our programs there 24 hours a day. And then, of course, please pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for our leaders and our ministers. But pray for Radio Liberty, our provision and our protection. America, land that I love. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king, but in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and, well, for the next hour, they're going to be the views of William Grigg, the former senior editor of the New American Magazine, and now, of course, he has his own blog and writes there regularly. He, of course, William, have you had a chance to work out at all any possibility of that other radio program we talked about?
I'm still in discussion about that, Doctor.
All right, fine. Well, we hope that he'll perhaps get on the Accent Radio Network. And, of course, William does write my monthly newsletter. And, William, we're actually putting out the latest newsletter. Do you have time to get started on the next one?
Yes, I do.
All right, very good. And my wife said the check is in the mail.
Oh,
so.
I appreciate that.
All right, fine. No, anyway, we said to him, we think that William does one of the finest jobs and the finest commentaries. And we are living in exciting times, and you need to be able to crystallize your thoughts out there in the listening audience as to what's going on. So what are we going to be talking about tonight, William? There's so many devastating things happening today. What are we going to talk about?
We have reached a point of saturation, it seems, with really troubling and potentially apocalyptic developments, but I think once again that we're only seeing the beginning of sorrows. For everything that's happened, his arm is stretched out still, so to speak. There's that really distressing passage from the book of Isaiah where it talks about all the plagues and horrors that befall upon a wicked and rebellious country, and for all this, his hand is stretched out still is the motif that runs through that chapter. Well, we've entered that phase, and as you say, it's an exciting time to be alive, and for exciting, of course, we can substitute the word terrifying. And one of the things that I find at once fascinating and a little bit ominous is the brazenness, the audacity being displayed by the people who are really running things in terms of indulging themselves in conspicuous and undisguised displays of utter depravity. And even when they are behaving in sort of a furtive way, they're no longer really taking adequate care to disguise or to conceal what they do. There's a really good example of that that's been highlighted in a number of places on the web just in the last few days at this politics and eggs breakfast in New Hampshire recently, where Rick Perry, who's the putative conservative candidate from Texas, he's the second most conservative presidential aspirant from Texas. He's not even really in the same echelon with Ron Paul in terms of fidelity to the Constitution or any of the other things that one would associate with true and traditional conservative, but he just finished making a speech where he was disgorging the prefabricated, poll-tested platitudes he's been fed by his handler. And during a little bit of a gaggle at the end of this presentation, the cameras were present when this sort of gray-haired and nondescript individual walked up to him and in almost sort of a stage whisper type of voice said, "Bank of America will help you out." The cameras happened to catch that. The microphones happened to catch that. And this is one of those moments where the real business of politics is transacted between somebody who is a bought and paid for rent boy on the part of the establishment. Mr. Perry is being told that the sugar daddies are going to provide for him as long as he remains a viable exponent of the views and positions that have been predetermined as correct by the real movers and shakers in politics. And this, of course, is the same guy who's been making noises about opposing the federal government's attempt to nationalize and centralize everything, and he's been making conspicuous and patently insincere noises about Ben Bernanke and the Federal Reserve being the enemy. And, of course, they are the enemy, but Rick Perry is their property.
And I think sort of vitally important. You know, he's been to Bilderberg meetings, Sydney. He is being built up by the Wall Street Journal as the perfect candidate, as they totally ignore Ron Paul. Go right ahead, William.
The latter point you made about the way that the media have conspicuously avoided mentioning Ron Paul is perhaps one of the best illustrations I've ever seen, Dr. Stand, of the axiom that you share with us frequently about illusion being enthroned and reality being banished from the discussion. It's gotten to the point, literally, where the comedian Jon Stewart put it this last week, Ron Paul is like the 13th floor of a hotel. There are more than 13 floors in your standard hotel, but if you take a look at the elevator panel, they run from the 11th floor to the 12th floor to the 14th floor, in the assumption that if you remove the number 13, that somehow that means you're no longer the 13th floor. The 13th floor is missing. And that's because of the superstitions of some people who are involved in enumerating the floors and designating them on the elevator control panel. Well, Ron Paul is the person whose name must not be spoken. He is he who must not be named in terms of discussions of the political candidates who are running for the Republican nomination, precisely because he is an unregenerate truth teller. Unregenerate is the wrong word. He is a thoroughly regenerate truth teller, but he is an unbowed and uncompromising truth teller, telling the truth as he's been given the wisdom to understand it without cavil, fear, or favor. And so suddenly he's created a dynamic in the political race in which people who are unreconstructed sycophants like Rick Perry are suddenly posing and pretending to be genuine populists who are shaking their fists in defiance of Washington. And in Rick Perry's case, going so far as to say that it would be, in his phrase, almost treasonous for Bernanke and the Federal Reserve to inflate the money supply in order to boost the economy. And by boosting the economy, of course, he's talking about the classic Keynesian pump priming, where spending is supposedly going to be what will bring about an economic recovery. That's the formula that Lord Keynes had talked about. You need to boost aggregate demand, as if you grow wealthier by spending money, and the money in question, of course, being conjured out of nowhere through fraud enforced by government coercion. That supposedly is what makes the economy hum and people become prosperous, when actually, of course, prosperity is a function of productivity. It's something that happens because of discipline and thrift and a low time preference. It's the sort of thing that happens when people produce things that others want to buy and offer services that other people want to contract. It has nothing to do with the creation or the gratuitous expansion of a medium of exchange that is inflicted on us by legal tender laws and created through counterfeiting, which is what the Federal Reserve is all about.
Okay, so, hold that thought. We'll be back here in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan and Sidney Williams talking a little bit about this. Rick Perry. Now, Rick Perry only announced his candidacy for the presidency 6 days ago. It was last Saturday. And yet, he is now the front runner. Why? Because all of the establishment newspapers, conservative and liberal, but they control both the conservative and the liberal papers, and they're all saying that Rick Perry, this handsome, masculine individual, is obviously the front runner now, having seized the initiative from Michelle Bachmann, and they're beginning to attack her, and they're just saying how wonderful Rick Perry is. Mm-hmm. You are going to witness in the weeks and months that lie ahead just how effectively the media is in molding the reality of the American people. Now, I'm not taking sides and pointing out who I might be backing, but I will certainly say that you're going to actually see the manipulation of the reality of the American people so that we will have two candidates a year from November, and that will be Rick Perry and Sidney Barack Obama. He has been picked by the establishment, as we mentioned earlier. He's been to the Bilderberg meeting, at least one of them. He is their man. And the fact that he would come out and say that if Ben Bernanke, the chairman of the Federal Reserve Board, was actually to increase the money supply in an effort to actually stimulate the economy would act to be an act of treason. Ladies and gentlemen, we've already done that twice.
Yeah.
That's quantitative easing one, quantitative easing two, and somewhere between $3 and $4 trillion have been poured into the economy. And we've got, as a result of that, unemployment rate, they'll admit to about 9.2%. Here in California, it's 12%. But if you look at the USIX figures on shadowstats.com and independent economists' analysis, why the U6 unemployment, that's the unemployed, those who are no longer getting unemployment checks, those who have given up looking for jobs because they can't find one, and those who are underemployed, over 22%.
Yeah.
My goodness, think how bad it might have been if they hadn't done all that money. Maybe they would have contracted the economy and we'd be getting out of this mess. I don't think they want to do that. I think they want to destroy our economy. And there, something big is afoot. I don't know when it's coming, but the next couple of weeks, you're going to find out some momentous financial or economic event is going to happen. If you didn't see today what happened to the price of gold and silver, you certainly want to check it out tomorrow. Go right ahead, William.
Yeah, you're entirely correct in terms of the dynamics here economically and the fact that in the weeks immediately ahead of us, we're going to get hit with repeated body blows, and we're already bleeding. We're already out of breath. But October in particular is going to be ghastly, and November is going to be even worse because, if I remember correctly, is November when the triggers are supposed to be pulled. And I think that that's when the pressure is going to be on here for Bernanke, once again, to mount up the high horse of hyperinflation and let the printing presses or the digital equivalents rip. And so what Perry has done is, after a career that's been completely unspotted by principle, he has suddenly branded himself as the guy who denounced the Federal Reserve. And that reputation is being reiterated at every opportunity by the image molders and those who are in charge of the official propaganda on behalf of the regime. You have the entire coterie of the Bush family and the retainers, Karl Rove et al., denouncing Rick Perry as an irresponsible extremist. And, of course, that's part of the script. They want to make sure that what you remember about this guy is that he's the guy who was denouncing the Fed. The very first thing he did practically of any public consequence after formally announcing his candidacy was to denounce Ben Bernanke as somebody who is practically a traitor.
And it was very interesting, Ron Paul's response was, why Rick Perry makes me almost look moderate. I may not agree with Bernanke, but I've never called him a traitor. Mm. Rick Perry makes me look like a moderate. I thought that was a wonderful line by Ron Paul. Go ahead.
Well, the thing about Ron Paul is he's saying just audit the Fed and the Fed will fall apart once the fraud's exposed. And that, of course, is much more in principled terms and substantive terms radical than what Rick Perry's talking about. Rick Perry was talking about bodily harm being done to Ben Bernanke, I think simply establishing the institution and demolishing the pretense that it's the legitimate function of any kind of a government would be a better approach than actually putting Ben Bernanke in physical peril. But the thing is, there's an old cliche that applies here perfectly, and that is that once you establish a reputation for punctuality, you can spend the rest of your career coming in as late to work as you want to, because people will always remember that you had obtained the reputation as the guy who's there early, if you showed up early, for instance, for the first couple of weeks of your employment, and so everything else is considered to be an anomaly. And that's what's going on here with Rick Perry being positioned as the bane enemy of the Fed and somebody who's just leapt the length of his chain trying to tear out the throat of Ben Bernanke, when, of course, this is a guy, Mr. Perry, who's been coasting to the commanding heights of politics on wave after wave of inflated federal subsidies pouring into a state that is an entirely owned, wholly owned subsidiary of the military-industrial complex. And, of course, part of that would be those elements of the oil industry that you find in Texas. That are very much tied into the establishment in terms of what goes on, not just in regards to corporate socialism, but specifically with respect to military contracting. If you took federal subsidies out of the equation, this much-discussed supposed job creation miracle in Texas would not exist. You have a huge and sprawling network of federally subsidized corporate contractors in the aerospace industry, in the computer industry, that they're tied into the Pentagon. You have all kinds of military bases that are very much dependent on what goes on in terms of the war economy. If you take a look at what exists in North Texas in terms of the major job-creating elements of the Texas economy, they're tied into either the military or what's another tentacle of the same creature, the prison industry, And so this is a guy who's been, for most of his career, simply a human pass-through for federal subsidies that have been made possible by the official counterfeiting carried out by the Fed. On July 17th of this past summer, the Austin American-Statesman reported, and I'm quoting now from that newspaper, almost half the state's job growth in the past 2 years was led by education, health care, and government, the sectors of the economy that will now take a hit as federal stimulus money runs out. By health care, of course, they're talking about health care being subsidized through Medicare, Medicaid, other transfer payments. That's one of the ways in which that sector of the economy, for the last several decades, couple of generations, has essentially been nationalized. Not fully, not completely, but for all intents and purposes, when you're talking about health care, you're talking about what the government is essentially running and managing now. There's an advocacy group in Texas called the Texas Watchdog Project, and they point out that stimulus jobs in Texas, get a load of this, cost about $130,000 per job, and there's a handful of them that cost more than $1 million apiece. That's all money that is being sent into Texas by way of subsidies using funds that are plundered from elsewhere. Now, what has happened as a result of all this stimulus money coming in, bear in mind, Rick Perry, the same guy who was just beating up Ben Bernanke this week a few years ago, was practically begging for Congress to pass TARP. You know, that helps explain why Bank of America said, we'll help you out. You know, they sent this sallow-complexioned guy to walk up to Rick Perry after that speech in New Hampshire and say, we'll help you out. I'm with Bank of America, which, by the way, is a bank that is headed for the same nirvana in which you find Lehman Brothers and Bear Stearns, most likely. Bank of America is going to go belly up probably before the end of the year. That's, I think, one of the shocks we can look for in what's going to be a stimulating fourth quarter of this year. But he's somebody, once again, Rick Perry, who is practically begging for TARP to be passed. And, you know, there's a huge banking presence in Texas. There has to be, because when you've got that many people who are part of the government-run section of the economy, you got to have a big role for the banking industry as well. So you've got a situation where the tide of stimulus funding, all these inflated dollars, that is starting to recede from Texas right now. But while they were on the receiving end of all these subsidies, they had this big influx of people coming from all throughout the country, people who are recent college graduates, particularly with advanced degrees in law and in education and other disciplines. They went there because the money was being sent there, and they followed the money. They were looking for employment. That created a multiplier effect, of course, as people went out looking for homes and looking for other types of domestic amenities there. That created a multiplier effect, a ripple effect in the economy, and that tended to buoy things up in Texas as well. Well, all that's going to fall apart now.
Well, I think there's one thing, though, that people are not talking about, and that is, of course, this massive energy find in southern Texas, where, of course, they found tremendous amounts of natural gas and oil, mm-hmm. and that is one of the most stimulating parts of the economy there, with the fracking, horizontal drilling. I mean, there are parts of Texas where, you know, they just can't find enough people to work, but sure. It's where they're doing the oil development, and that is what... One reason why, of course, the economy in Texas is so good, having nothing to do with Governor Perry, but, of course, sure. That's not going to be brought out. And the fact that, 37% of all the new jobs in the country are in Texas, largely due to this massive energy find. But Rick Perry's policies cannot certainly take credit for it. Go ahead.
Yeah, not only is it true that his policies can't take credit for it, but that's the sort of thing that not even government intervention can fully suppress. I mean, we actually find a huge source of energy and people are actually developing and contributing original wealth to the economy. They're going to be benefits. But I don't think those benefits are going to offset what's going to happen in Texas as the stimulus funds run out and all these subsidized jobs start to disappear. And that's going to pull down entire towns, entire cities in Texas. And I think what's happened is the people controlling Rick Perry have calculated that that's not going to happen until after next November. So he might very well be in the White House and Texas might fall through the floor in economic terms while he's coasted on their supposed miracle to 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue.
Reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. Well, you're going to witness that a great deal in the coming weeks and months. We'll be right back here with William Gray. William, go right ahead.
When you talk about...
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Well, many men begin having prostate symptoms when they get to be 60 years of age, so Radio Liberty is offering a great product. It's called Prostate Support. It's put together by one of the country's leading health food manufacturers. It contains ingredients which have been proven to work. I know health experts who take the product, and I use it as well, and I think it really is very effective. In addition, we have a product for women during that difficult time of life. It's called Menopause Support. And lastly, we have a product for people who have chronic difficulty with their immune system and nothing else seems to work. It's called Immune Support. All are available by calling 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. These products are compiled by a very reliable company. Give us a call, 1-800-544-8927.
Did you know that there's an increasing amount of scientific data which says that fluoride in drinking water is dangerous? Are you aware that your drinking water may in fact contain many unhealthy substances, even things which can cause sickness or disease? If you'd like information on how to remove these contaminants, find out about the Verkey water filter. You can call 800-544-8927 for complete information. There is a way to return to having pure, safe drinking water. The Verkey water filter. Call 800-544-8927 for information about a product that could protect you and your family from waterborne disease. The number to call is 800-544-8927. Call today.
Roderick Perry's background of when he started out in this Texas legislature as a Democrat. He started out as a Democrat in 1985. Now here we are, almost 25 years later, 27 years later. He's now the leader of the Republican establishment there in Texas. But believe me, he is subservient to the people of great wealth who are behind him. But they back the right and the left. They back both the Democrats and the Republicans. So when we go to the polls, we ordinarily vote for the candidate of not of our choice, but of their choice. So go right ahead.
Yeah. In 1985, he was a Democrat who was very conscious of cultivating an image that was glamorous and in a sort of daytime soap opera kind of way. As a matter of fact, he rather resembles an actor whose last name is Moss, whose first name escapes my memory right now. This guy was on, I believe, All My Children or One Life to Live, one of those two daytime soap operas, for about 10 or 15 years. Before that, he would play bass guitar in a band called Player. But he looks exactly like Rick Perry, at least to my eyes he does. I think they're about the same age. But Rick Perry, of course, has always been conscious of those assets, those superficial assets that he's enjoyed, which is why, as a freshman legislature, he was somebody who dressed like a male model and capitalized on that to become a very successful politician. And Paul DeGallo points out that he was very good and completely ruthless in terms of pursuing political victory. That's how you end up running up a string of a dozen or more consecutive election victories. So this is a guy who knows how to win a campaign. The other thing DeGallo pointed out is that Perry was utterly indifferent to principle. You're somebody who could very easily spout whatever was put in front of him in order to attract whatever constituency he needed at any given time in order to win an election. And so if you ended up with a Romney-Perry or Perry-Romney ticket, I think that the likelier configuration actually is a Romney-Perry ticket, with Perry being used to bring in the conservative base and Romney being used to cement the loyalty of the so-called Eastern establishment, Eastern Seaboard Republican patriarchal class, if you will. I think those two together would be a very marketable ticket, very establishment friendly, and furthermore, between the two of them, if you have these two individuals, you have myriad potential positions on issues because they've never been wedded, neither of them, to any hard identifiable core of principle. And in the case of Rick Perry, this is something that has gotten a little bit of attention but needs to be underscored. 3 years after he was first elected to office in Texas as a state representative, he was a member of Al Gore's 1988 presidential campaign. At the time, Al Gore was in his early 40s. I believe he was 40 or 41, 42. He was the pick of the New Republic magazine. I actually was employed as an intern at the New Republic magazine in 1987, 1988, when they were endorsing Al Gore. And at the time, Al Gore, according to, this is an interesting fact that I've never been able to use appropriately, Al Gore was ventilating arms control proposals that were being fed to him by the Soviet embassy. We actually had an off-the-record, for the purposes of journalism, an off-the-record meeting with Max Kampelman and some of the chief arms negotiators for the Reagan administration, and one of the points they made was that Al Gore, who was making a name for himself as somebody who was the maven of arms control, somebody who was really able to nail down the minutiae of these difficult issues, was just being used by the Soviet embassy as a front to put their arms control treaty positions into the discussion. And that's about the time that Al Gore remade himself as an environmentalist. Al Gore, of course, was somebody whose father had been a very tight ally with Armand Hammer, who was very close to every Soviet dictator, beginning with Lenin, identified as Lenin and the Soviet elite's path to American business. And so, you know, Al Gore was keeping it in the family when he was acting as a conduit for Soviet arms control negotiators. Well, this is the guy who was Rick Perry's man in 1988, and I don't know at what point he was given the go-ahead to change from a Democrat to a Republican, but that, of course, would represent a very telling illustration of just how malleable this guy is, and how opportunistic he is, and how completely divorced from principle he must be in order to do such things.
Well, we live in very interesting times. The difficulty is, of course, you'll not hear these sorts of things discussed on the regular media because, of course, they're controlled. They're directed by the people who pull the strings behind the scenes, what we call the Brotherhood of Darkness. There is a small cabal that run people on both political tickets, and we go to the polls every 4 years and vote for the candidate of their choices. We'll be right back. Stand back here. What do you mean go right ahead?
Well, we're talking about the way that they're positioning Rick Perry as really the reddest of the red meat candidates for the conservatives. I just, in the half minute or so that I was listening to the interlude music, received in my email box here an article from the Daily Beast, which of course is Newsweek magazine, entitled Perry, King of the Know-Nothings, by Michael Tomasky, who's obviously a liberal commentator. And he refers here to Rick Perry as running the most right-wing presidential candidacy by a serious contender since I don't know when. And he goes on to say, George W. Bush, and it leaves me speechless that he's starting to look reasonable by comparison with the current crop of GOP presidential hopefuls. He's hardly apologetic about his political views, but he and Karl Rove did have the sense to know when they were throwing gasoline on the domestic fire, and they did it in smallish doses. You might be able to Google up the odd careless quote from Bush about something like global warming, but in general, and especially on the occasions when he knew his words were being very closely watched, he steered well clear of extremism. Then he goes on to say that we should fast forward to Perry. During his maiden week on the hustings, when he knew every word would be carefully tracked, Perry declared that global warming is a hoax perpetrated by scientists greedy for grant money. By the way, that's a defensible description. This earned him a rare 4 Pinocchios from Washington Post fact-checker column, and that's not the sort of thing that's going to hurt him, quite frankly, with the Republican Party faithful, and probably not with the public at large. Then he goes on to say, every new day has brought forth a new gem. On Thursday, he told a New Hampshire school-aged child that he's not sure anybody actually knows completely and absolutely how old the Earth is. He preceded these with a remark about Barack Obama not being respected by the military. And, of course, there was the infamous statement that Ben Bernanke will be committing treason by priming the economy. Now, all these things, of course, in this Newsweek article are used to demonize Perry in the eyes of the liberals, but Perry's not playing to that constituency. He's playing to the Republican primary constituency. And I think, once again, his chief value here in terms of attracting and retaining the conservative base would be as somebody at the bottom of the ticket, with somebody like Mitt Romney heading it up. And between the two of them, once again, you've got two completely establishment-vetted collectivist candidates.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan and Chris Williams simply talking about that looks like we suddenly have a Rick Perry playing to the conservatives, and he's saying everything the conservatives believe. He's talking about the fraud of global warming. He's talking about the Federal Reserve System. He's certainly doing everything he can to endear himself to the conservative wing of the Republican Party in an effort to defuse Ron Paul's candidacy and to suggest that he really believes what he's saying. In fact, even before he started running, he started cultivating the Christians, and unfortunately, one of our leading Christians actually spoke at his large Christian rally. I'm speaking of Perry's Christian rally, and he's going to play the Christians just exactly like George Bush did. Mm-hmm. George Bush played the Christians. I was with a group of Christians that met with George Bush in 1999, I believe it was, and we interviewed all of the candidates, and George Bush professed his Christian beliefs. But we know what happened when he was in the White House. They would get the Christian leaders to come, and they'd slap him on the back and tell him how sincere they were and pray with him. And then when they left, they'd roar with laughter and almost not quite, but roll on the floor at how stupid the Christians were. Somebody wrote a book about it. Mm-hmm. But the publisher of that book would never allow me to find out where this man was. He'd been actually in the White House in favor, in charge of relationships of the Bush administration with the Christians, and he simply talked about how they ridiculed the Christian leaders, and yet right now Rick Perry is inviting them to be part of his campaign. He wants their counsel so that he can do the right thing to save America. Well, right now, of course, our guest is William Grigg, and before we go on, William, I want you to tell our listeners how they get your blog, how they can certainly I get your PayPal button, and we're not going to be taking any calls for the time being. If we want calls, we'll certainly ask for them. But how can people certainly get your material and get in touch with you? Like to help,
Dr. Stan? I really appreciate that. My blog is called Pro Libertate, and the easiest way to find it would be to go to Google or some other search engine and type in the words Pro Libertate, LIBERTATE. And if necessary, put in my last name, Grigg, or just type in William Grigg. You know, some combination of those search terms, you'll find Pro Libertate. The web address, for those who want to go to it directly, is freedominourtime.blogspot.com. Freedom in Our Time, written as one word, freedominourtime.blogspot.com. Try to update it between one and three times a week, depending upon my schedule. and usually the essays are about 2,000 words in length. The current essay is about Rick Perry, and it goes in depth into some aspects of his record in Texas and some aspects of what's happening with the Texas Republican establishment that I think are not getting sufficient exposure in during this week when Rick Perry is ubiquitous. And as you mentioned, Dr. Stan, at the bottom of every essay, there is a PayPal button that people can use to make donations if they're so inclined. I really appreciate the help that we've received. Just this evening, as a matter of fact, about an hour or so before coming on the air, I received a very generous gift that's going to be of tremendous use to me and my family. It's one of those things where literally in the last couple of days, I was sitting here talking with my wife, Corinne, and actually praying and saying, look, I really don't know how we're going to be able to get through the next month and a half, quite frankly, in terms of the expenses and some of our challenges that we're dealing with. And it's the sort of thing that has happened with quite remarkable regularity when I'll find myself literally at the point of something akin to despair, and then something like this happens. So it's one of those things that one of many things, countless things, that testify to the fact that there is a benevolent creator who presides over the universe and is very generous in his provision when people are doing what they earnestly believe to be something which is in harmony with his will. And for that, I'm very grateful. I recognize, Dr. Stan, that you've been a providential instrument in blessing our family, and your audience has been very generous to us as well, and that's something for which we'll always be grateful.
Well, you know, the interesting thing is that God provides, but he never provides more than you need. He never makes you rich, but he does provide, and this is how we keep going with our radio program, and this is why I really personally appreciate your help for William Craig, because I think he does a very good job of certainly one of our most articulate spokesmen. William, go right ahead.
Dr. Stan, I really appreciate that. On the subject of the person you referred to just a few minutes ago who'd been in Bush's inner circle, are you talking about David Kuo, KUO, who, if I remember correctly, had been in charge of the
yes.
Office of Faith-Based Programs?
Yes, I remember, and his fascinating book, but you know, it was so interesting. I did everything possible to try to track him down, and his publisher did everything possible to keep me from tracking him down. The last thing they wanted was to get publicity, so often they publish these books with one intention, and that is burying them. And they tried to bury that book.
they go through the trouble of publishing a book just for the specific purpose of trying to bury it. I mean, that's the sort of thing that happened with Carol Quigley, and his book Tragedy and Hope and his book on the Anglo-American Establishment. At one point, the publisher had actually destroyed the plates that were used to run original pressings of that book, of the Tragedy and Hope, which was, of course, this huge and almost unreadable history of politics and sociology going back a very long way into history. But it's just that one segment that deals with the power elite and the way that they manipulate American politics and limit our options, particularly with respect to electoral politics, and limit our options in such a way that they prosper no matter what happens in terms of mass participation in politics. How they control the options, they control the way that we perceive what's going on by virtue of their influence of their domination of the media and all this. That's the section of the book that everybody wants to read and everybody considers most important, and that's the reason why the publisher decided at one point to try to deep fix that book. But with respect to the way that
if I could just comment, you know, basically when I went through Professor Quigley's papers at Georgetown University back in 1980, I came across an interview he did with a reporter from the Washington Post where he talks about how his book was suppressed. Now, remember, he is a liberal. He taught at Harvard and Princeton and Georgetown University. But, of course, it's a fascinating interview, and you can hear it in our four-tape set on the secret government, and you'll actually hear Professor Quigley talking about how they actively suppressed his first book. His second book, The Anglo-American Establishment, was actually completed in 1949, and no publisher No publisher in America that he could, Professor Quigley could find, would touch the book. It was suppressed for 32 years. It was published then 2 years after, one year after I went to Professor Quigley's papers. It was published by a man who, had a post office. His address was a post office box in Grand Central Station that doesn't exist.
Yeah.
He did mention his name in the first edition. He took it out of all subsequent editions when I contacted this gentleman, who actually had somehow or other gotten the manuscript. I know it's accurate because I found it among Professor Quigley's papers, but had actually gotten hold of a copy. He published it. We're eternally indebted to him. But, of course, he was afraid to come onto my program, quite frankly afraid for fear of the repercussions that could happen. Even, you know, certainly many decades after Professor Quigley had passed away. Because, of course, the establishment has a long memory, and they actually kill people who sometimes bring out the truth. So this gentleman would not come onto the program, and I personally have talked to him. Go right ahead with your story, will you?
That's exactly the sort of thing that came to my mind when I was looking at that video of Mr. Perry and this very nondescript and forgettable individual who was the emissary of Bank of America, who just walked up to him and said, almost in the fashion of somebody out of a Potboiler spy fiction novel, I'm with Bank of America and we'll help you out. That's all he said. That's all that needed to be said. And the thing is, I think that contacts that are that subtle in terms of the way that they're delivered, the way the message is delivered, but that substantive are very much the way the politics are negotiated. You have that, and then you juxtapose this with the fact that as John Stewart, who being a comedian can get away with saying certain things that supposedly serious commentator can't, in his video montage, I believe it was either Monday or Tuesday this past week, had a segment where on live television, during a live broadcast on CNN, from, I believe, in Ames in Iowa, it was in Iowa in any case, you had a guy doing a stand-up in front of a stage where Ron Paul was speaking. He said, Ron Paul was speaking, but we're here in front of Sarah Palin's tour bus and waiting for Rick Perry to show up. And in real time, on live television, the newsreader at CNN headquarters said, okay, well, don't even bother, I'm paraphrasing, don't even bother with Ron Paul. If you see Sarah Palin or Rick Perry, let us know. But if you got pictures of Ron Paul, go ahead and keep them to yourself. They're not really interesting. There's a piece by Roger Simon on Politico.com this week talking about the fact that there is now an overt and candidly expressed understanding on the part of the people who are still the self-appointed gatekeepers and guardians of the holy consensus that you cannot talk about Ron Paul. And it gets to the point where they're no longer disguising the fact that they're not going to allow Ron Paul to have an opportunity to resonate with the public. Whatever you think of Ron Paul as an individual or the merits of his message, the fact is he's being deliberately and conspicuously shunted aside as an option that is unacceptable to the people who are tutors in acceptable reality.
I don't know if you saw that headline, because it came out just shortly after the election there in Iowa, where Michelle Bachmann came in first, but that was because she got 4,800 votes, but she bought the votes. She gave free tickets to 4,000 people. So there are only 800 people who actually paid to get in so they could vote for her. Ron Paul's 4,700 votes, just about 1% less, were all people who already supported him. So it was a totally fraudulent election.
Sure.
But the headline announced, Bachmann wins Iowa contest. Politi is third.
Yes.
Bachmann wins, Politi third. Why did they ignore the fact that Ron Paul was second? Well, that is freedom of the press, ladies and gentlemen. We have freedom of the press today, which means if you own the press, you have the freedom to suppress whatever you want to. When I ran for Congress some years ago against a man named Leon Panetta, but I was running in the primary, and I won the Republican primary. And it was a contested race that was about 2 weeks after the election before they finally certified I'd won. And the reporter later told me she had gone to the editor of our local paper, the Santa Cruz Sentinel, and said, well, Dr. Monteith won the Republican primary. Are we going to run an article? And the editor said, of course not. We would never run an article saying Dr. Monteith had run the Republican primary. And then, of course, I got a chance to run against Leon Panetta. Mm-hmm. That was a real experience. Go right ahead.
Yeah, he certainly prospered by selling his soul to buyer's market. I mean,
basically, he was so far to the left. He had a 95% ADA, that's socialist rating, and 96% ACLU rating, that's even to the left of the communists, many of them. And, of course, this is the man who is the Secretary of Defense today. But then nobody in my electoral districts other than me knew that, and they would never, I would make the statement. It was always totally ignored by the editors, who at all the local newspapers would simply censor it out. But go ahead.
Yeah, Leon Panetta is the same guy who just announced today that Iraq has requested that we stay beyond our supposedly firm and defined and concrete withdrawal point this year. That supposedly the Iraqi government's petition that we remain in defiance of our solemn assurances and black letter agreement that the troops would leave. And he, of course, had been at the CIA before going to the Defense Department. Now you've got Petraeus in charge of the CIA. But these are the type of things that happen because there's a script that's being followed, and after the fact, they will retcon the rationale to fit the prescribed policy. And in real time, when you're dealing with somebody like a Ron Paul who speaks timely and timeless truth out of school and out of season from the perspective of the people who are self-appointed rulers, they literally, in a way that Orwell couldn't have imagined, are rectifying him, to use the Orwellian term, rectifying him out of the conversation. Once again, I have to advert to this absolutely stunning piece of legitimate journalism that Jon Stewart did on The Daily Show, where he showed, among other things, a montage of the talking heads for, I believe, all four of the major cable news outlets, where they all used the same phrase, top tier. We have a top tier now in the Republican Party among the presidential aspirants, and they would be Bachman and Romney and... the third one was
the
Perry,
HTC
Bachman,
status
Perry,
from
Bachman,
AT&T,
Perry,
the only phone with a Facebook share button that glows anytime.
That, you know, by virtue of his second place finish, the statistical tie with Bachman, and given the fact that he didn't pay for the vote, and given the fact as well that there are plausible allegations that about 150 votes that were cast just simply were disposed of, Ron Paul, of course, should be in that top tier, but he was never mentioned. And then Chris Wallace at Fox went on to say, well, we have to mention Rick Santorum, too, who had a very strong showing, which means, you know, very strong showing. I believe he had something on the order of a couple of hundred votes. And so he was being mentioned in spite of the fact that he was almost at the bottom of the pack. But this is considered to be a strong showing because Rick Santorum is in favor of a war with Iran, and Ron Paul is not. And the most memorable exchange in the one debate that they had just before the straw poll was between Ron Paul and Rick Santorum, which Ron Paul was saying that it would be perfect lunacy to go to war with Iran, and giving some background on the fact of American involvement in overthrowing the admittedly bad but elected government in Iran in 1953. And I believe today is the anniversary of that coup that was instigated by the CIA and by British intelligence. And, of course, we're still dealing with the aftershocks of that coup and several decades of duplicitous and illegal meddling in the affairs of that country. And one of the reasons why Iran has a nuclear program today is because under Richard Nixon, you had the United States government helping to build the nuclear program under the Shah, and they gave him a huge and modern air force and a huge military and intelligence apparatus that was of great use when he was overthrown by the Ayatollah. And the Ayatollah was supported by the same radical mullahs that had been funded by the CIA back in 1953. Well, that's the kind of thing that Ron Paul had the audacity to mention in that debate with Rick Santorum. And he schooled Rick Santorum very, very soundly, which is one of the reasons why he'll never be forgiven for doing that. He was speaking these truths that our masters don't want us to hear. And that's why he's being turned into an unperson in real time with the world watching. It's really quite an amazing display.
But, you know, the most exciting thing is we have alternative media. And
yeah.
There are more and more people realizing that freedom of the press means that when you own the press, you have the freedom to suppress whatever you want to. And believe me, ladies and gentlemen, they mold our reality. They form our tastes. They create our ideas. We are manipulated. The media is controlled, ladies and gentlemen, by what I call the Brotherhood of Darkness. I guess this evening, William Grigg will be back in a moment to wrap up the program. Hear it. Well, we've got 3 minutes for you to wrap up the program.
Well, Dr. Chan, once again, as always, it's a real privilege and a blessing to be on this program. Thank you.
Heart disease is on the rise. Clogged arteries, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol levels may not be fully detected by you, but the symptoms are there. Loss of energy, blood sugar spikes, and